I'm pleased to see at least those in the courtroom arrive safely, including the most important folks here. The court calls United States v. Arness. Counsel for the appellant.
Good morning, Chief Judge Baker, members of this honorable court. I, Captain Michael Schrammer, along with Captain Jonathan Legg, represent the appellant in this case, Lieutenant Colonel Mark Arness. The Air Force Court properly entertained a writ under the All Writs Act, as it was in aid of their existing jurisdiction and was necessary and appropriate. This is consistent with the prominent themes articulated by the Supreme Court that the systems of courts established for the military justice system should serve as the primary mechanism for review of court-martial cases, and that the courts within the military justice system should have an opportunity to consider challenges to court-martial proceedings.
Well, let's say we agree with all of that. I don't see anything in that opinion or any other opinion by the Supreme Court that suggests that any military court has jurisdiction in excess of what the statutes gives us.
Your Honor, for looking at the jurisdiction in this case, I think there's three things that we need to do. We first need to look at Article 69 on its face, and we need to also read Article 69, in conjunction with this court's precedent, namely U.S. v. McPhail and Unger, and the Supreme Court precedent in Goldsmith and Donato.
Okay, so let's look at 69 on its face.
Yeah.
Should we select D as a place to start?
Yes, Your Honor.
And tell me what, can you define some of these terms? First of all, what does subject to action mean?
Subject to action would be...
Versus what's the result, but first, how do you define subject to action?
Here would be any court-martial case falling under the limits where they would have automatic review to the CCA.
Subject to action by the judge advocate general.
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that a sub-jurisdictional 69 case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, I'm trying to ask something even more narrow, which is what does the phrase subject to action mean?
I mean,
even take it outside of this for a second, because I think the temptation to argue all the other stuff is quite high. So if I said, I don't have a good hypothetical, even if any hypothetical is ever good, but if something is subject to action, what does that mean?
I think a strict reading, Your Honor, would be that whether or not that person chooses to take action.
So potentially within their purview, but not necessarily something that they've acted upon?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's a fair reading.
And then, so what is the relationship between 1 and 2?
That's the interesting part, Your Honor, because if you read Section 2, is any action taken by the Judge Advocate General under this section and then in such a case, which seems, again, a strict reading to refer back to Section 1, but
Section 1 has another part to it, doesn't it? Connected by an and, it's a conjunctive.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not a disjunctive. So not only does it have to be subject to action, what else has to happen?
It has to be sent to the CCA by the Judge Advocate General.
Okay, so in this case, was it sent to the CCA by the Judge Advocate General?
No, Your Honor, it was not.
And in this case, was any action taken by the Judge Advocate General? Was any action actually taken?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
But if we read Part 2, this is any action taken by the Judge Advocate General under this section in such case. In such case, seemingly refers back to Part 1. But again, a strict reading of this would be Part 2 is superfluous if we have a strict reading of Part 1.
Oh. In what way?
Your Honor, it says any action taken by the Judge Advocate General.
A court of criminal appeals may review under 66 a case subject to two conditions precedent, and an action in such case subject to two conditions precedent. Isn't that the way the statute reads?
It does, Your Honor, but if you look at Part 2, Part two is predicated on the action that already has to be taken in part one.
No. One is that they could take action, but that they may take action. They could take action, but presumably did not. Instead, sent it to the CCA. Part two is they, in fact, took action, and the CCA has reviewed it. And the CCA can review the action that they take. One is potential action. One is actual action.
But it isn't either. Sent.
Yes, Your Honor.
It has to be sent, and this wasn't sent.
Well, hang on. What's the relationship between one and two? Clearly, in one, it has to be sent.
Yes,
is it your view that in two it has to be sent, or is the predicate there that there's been an action taken?
Your Honor, it would be that the predicate that an action is taken.
And you earlier said to Judge Ryan that in this case no action was taken. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
What is an action that might be taken by the TJAG?
Well, Your Honor, it's how you define action, I guess.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean,
you're supposed to tell me how you define it, not how I define it. Something like that.
Action could be where the judge, advocate general, actually acts in the case and possibly grants some sort of...
Reduces the sentence,
yes.
Increases... I don't think they can do that, but... Okay.
Yes, sir.
And in this case, it is your view that the TJAG did not take any action.
Well, Your Honor, I think he did take some action in that he did review this case under 69A and...
So is that an action or not an action for the purposes of paragraph 2 from the standpoint of appellant?
Your Honor, I think it could be construed as an action.
Well, anything could be construed as an action. Is it your view that it was an action?
Yes, Your Honor. Is it an action that, for what we're doing, that can suffice for collateral review?
But you would, I think, have also indicated that where the TJAG actually changes something, that's clearly an action.
That is clearly.
So one can have an argument either way whether doing nothing is an action.
Okay, but simply getting the case under 69, and you're saying that's an action?
Your Honor, the...
Then doesn't that render 1A superfluous? Because the mere act of getting the case under 69 is an action.
Your Honor, it could be construed by...
Okay. But what I'm interested in is the fact that it wasn't sent. Where's jurisdiction? That's a conjunctive condition precedent.
Yes, sir.
So it wasn't done, so where's the jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I think when we're looking at jurisdiction, we first look at this court's ruling in McFay.
No, we first look at the statute. We are an Article I court. They are an Article I court. This is a statutory system, and we are limited to the jurisdiction given to us in the statute. Now,
you agree with the general? Do you agree with the general premise that under the All Writs Act cannot extend jurisdiction that does not already exist or create jurisdiction that does not already exist?
Yes,
I think you started with that. Is that sort of a basic black letter law,
that
right?
That was, and that was a point that was articulated again by the Supreme Court in Goldsmith.
Okay, so I think Judge Stuckey's getting at, which is, where does the existing jurisdiction come from? In it can't really start with case law. It has to start with the statute somewhere.
Yes, sir.
A statute somewhere.
And it stems from Article 69. I think the courts have read any action taken by the judge advocate general in this case to mean cases that are either that he has reviewed and denied, or I think, to some degree, cases that could be reviewed by the judge advocate general, and he has failed to act on those.
Okay, but he didn't send it. It was not sent. So where's the jurisdiction? That's back to my original question.
And, Your Honor, I think the best answer I have for you is what I just articulated.
McPhail?
Well, Your Honor, reading the language that any, deciphering what any action taken by the judge advocate general means, in this particular case, any action is in fact.
But you keep referring to 1A. I'm referring to 1B, and they're in the conjunctive, and you haven't answered my question.
Well, Your Honor, I'm referring now to... Yes, Your Honor. It was not sent.
Well, then where's the jurisdiction?
But, Your Honor, that's why we have writs. I think, as the Supreme Court said in Donato, they held specifically that Article I courts have jurisdiction to entertain writs to consider allegations that an earlier judgment of conviction was fundamentally flawed in a fundamental respect.
Okay. McPhail was a case where the court martial simply lacked jurisdiction. McPhail was not a 69 case. McPhail was a case where the court martial, the military judge's court martial, held the court martial lacked jurisdiction under O'Callaghan, which was in effect then. And it has nothing to do with Article 69. It has nothing. It contains some loose language that very likely didn't survive Goldsmith. And Judge Cook explicitly repudiated his opinion about 3 years later. So what's the weight of McPhail?
Well, Your Honor, it had the opportunity to be overturned by higher courts, and it has not.
This is an argument from judicial inaction.
And I think the repudiation by the judge in that case wasn't directly on point to the holding.
Well, but the holding isn't on point either.
I think what McPhail tells us, though, is this idea of the ability of the military courts were instituted to be able to supervise the inferior courts, where there is a legal right without an existing legal remedy. The same holds for McPhail. I mean, there wasn't an express ability for them under any article at that point, under Article 67, for the court in that case to review that case. And they used the same standard that I just articulated to you, and I think that same standard applies here in this case. When we have military members that do not have a legal right,
What is the right being vindicated?
Well, Your Honor, the appellant in this case raised Fourth and Fifth Amendment violations. He raised ineffective assistance of counsel.
And he got a sentence that was sub-jurisdictional and hence didn't entitle him to review. That is a decision made by Congress in writing the statute, and I don't know how we get around the fact that Congress saw fit to limit jurisdiction to cases, limit CCA jurisdiction to cases exceeding a certain sentence, and to remand to the TJAG under 69 for other cases. They both get review. That's the end of it.
Counsel, you're not suggesting that the TJAG didn't review the case, right? The TJAG did review this case.
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
And the TJAG had the opportunity, if he so chose, to disapprove the finding or the sentence or do something if he believed that was warranted.
Yes, Your Honor.
And he chose not to do that.
Yes, Your Honor, but the judge, in general, he's not in court. He's not
but
a judicial body.
But whose determination is it as to who has the authority in different instances to take action? It's Congress's, right?
Yes, Your Honor. But I think going to your point and Judge Stickey's point, Your Honor, I think McPhail has spoken about this exact point, and they articulated in that decision that when Congress did limit review under Article 66 to a certain standard or a certain sentence, they also articulated that the nature of the court's role in the military justice system was seen in larger terms. And in McPhail, they cited extensively to the subcommittee proceedings that they had discussing what was meant by the creation of these military courts. And I think it's clear from that case and that holding and the progeny of that case that although Congress has delineated the types of cases that will get automatic review, there are a certain subsection of cases that are deserving of review when
they got. He got review. He got review by the TJAG. That's what he was entitled to under the statute. The TJAG, for whatever reasons, elected not to give him relief. He may not have gotten to relief. He got review. No one has a right to relief. One may have a right to review.
Yes, Your Honor.
And he got that.
But, Your Honor, it's not meaningful review under what we consider a judicial body. It's more akin to an administrative proceeding.
But that's a decision, isn't it, for Congress to make? Are you suggesting this has a constitutional dimension? That wasn't raised below.
But, Your Honor, it was raised in the form of a writ to the CCA. And the fundamental issues that were raised form the basis as to why we're here today, the writ that he made. And I think when we look at...
The issues that were raised are that the CCA interpreted 69 in a particular fashion. They did not cloak themselves, as far as I know, in constitutional clothing. They interpreted 69 in a particular way.
Your Honor, but they...
The question is the legitimacy, the correctness of that interpretation.
It is, Your Honor.
It's a statutory question.
And I think we've been talking about McPhail. I mean, even they, in their decision, left open to the fact that even though they're ruling in that decision, at some point there would be a limit. And in Goldsmith, that limit was defined by the Supreme Court, that the military courts don't have purview to review every action that has some military nexus. And in that case, they specifically found that this court cannot review an executive order of the president, specifically finding in that case that accused had original 66 review that he didn't take advantage of. He also had other avenues available to him via the Board of Military Corrections and other proceedings.
Couldn't this guy go to the correction board?
No, Your Honor.
He can't go on sentence. He can't go on clemency. But he can go to the correction board. I know. I sat on the correction board.
But for other matters, yeah, other than the fundamental issues that are at issue in this case. And then after Goldsmith, we had a question then. Where are we between McPhail, Unger, and Goldsmith? And the decision in the Netto came out, which I think fits squarely into the CCA's reasoning in this case, extending review to the appellate. And the idea in Netto was that, similarly, there was an issue there, a fundamental issue in dealing with ineffective assistance of counsel. And the Supreme Court ultimately held that, although not specifically enumerated jurisdiction, the court there found that because it was a fundamental issue, a military member should be at least given the opportunity to be heard on those issues.
Counsel, you're out of time. Are there any other questions on this round? All right, you'll have the opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Roger Bruce, Lieutenant Colonel Holman, and I have the privilege of representing the United States in this case. The Air Force Court has no jurisdiction to review appellate.
Can you speak up?
Yes, Your Honor. Sorry. The Air Force Court had no jurisdiction to review appellate's petition for extraordinary relief. This court should reverse the Air Force Court decision that the, quote, requested writ was in aid of their existing jurisdiction, and this court should issue an opinion that repudiates once and for all the Army Court and the Air Force Court's outdated and erroneous concept of supervisory jurisdiction, which is based on some outdated and now erroneous decisions from this court from long ago. The Air Force Court had no statutory jurisdiction to review this case.
What does subject to action mean, and what does any action taken mean?
Your Honor, I think subject to action is a predicate. It's a condition. It's a requirement that must be first exhausted. Much like under the All Writs Act, the first predicate is there statutory, existing statutory jurisdiction? You don't even get to the questions about necessary or appropriate, which is really where the bulk of the appellate.
So subject to action doesn't necessarily mean action's been taken. It just means it is subject to action.
That's correct.
I mean, it's a little circular. Okay, then what's any action taken?
Well, we read this statute very differently than the appellant does, Your Honor.
I've caught on to that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What's any action mean, by the way?
We read paragraph 2 is actually governing the scope of the review that the Air Force Court would take if in fact the two prior requirements were met up in subparagraph 1, we don't get to 1 past 1. The appellate, the Air Force Corps, can't overcome 1. So 2, quite frankly, is irrelevant to the discussion in this case.
So the question you pose is whether it's the court may review in two circumstances, 1 and 2, or in your view, the court may review in one circumstance where these three things are met.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. What is an action taken means what, though? So, I mean, let's take either person's view or either side's view. We still have to figure out what 2 means, correct? In theory.
No, I don't think we do, because we don't get past 1.
Okay.
1 shuts us down.
Well, I'd still like to figure out what it means then.
Well, I guess it would mean any action.
Or maybe it means nothing, in which case we have to ask, why is it there? Isn't there a doctrine that says Congress must mean something when it sticks something in a statute, although we secretly know that's not always the case?
I guess, Your Honor, it's possible that a TJAG could refer a case to the CCA under 1. In a case where the TJAG actually took no action, decided to defer to the CCA and let them sort.
Isn't that 1? That's 1.
Or it could be that the TJAG.
So if 1 means I'm not taking any action, you take a look at it, what does 2 mean?
It could mean a variety of things, but frankly, Your Honor,
for example,
with all due respect, it's irrelevant what 2 means.
So you don't want to answer my question. I mean, isn't it the process of a court that you answer my questions? I mean,
of course, Your Honor.
Okay, you can say you don't think it decides the case, but you're still supposed to answer the question.
Yes, Your Honor, of course. I'm not sure what any action means. I think it could mean a variety of things. It could mean the TJAG took an action and decided to refer the case anyway to the Air Force Court to see if he got it right, or the TJAG decided he wasn't sure what to do, and so he deferred by referring the case to the Air Force Court. It could mean a variety of things, Your Honor.
His referral, or in the terms of the sending, a condition precedent to jurisdiction?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And that was not present in this case. In fact, the procedural framework of this case proves the legal error committed by the Air Force Court. He committed 26 offenses. He was tried at a general court. The military judge sentenced him to 11 months. So we all know it wasn't going to meet the Article 66 jurisdictional requirements. Direct appellate review, and we disagree with the appellant when he said he didn't get appellate review, but direct appellate review was completed under Article 69. The judge advocate general decided not to refer the case to the Air Force Court, as he could have chosen to do. So under the All Writs Act, it's the appellant's burden to establish 2 things. First, was his writ in aid of the Air Force Court's existing jurisdiction? If he can't get past hurdle number 1, we don't even get to hurdle number 2, and that was his writ necessary or appropriate? And that's where the bulk of his complaint comes. He talks about the importance of the constitutional issues. Frankly, the issues that don't matter, was there jurisdiction or not, is the absolute question that must be answered by any court before it begins to act. And that's where the Air Force Court erred here. They committed obvious legal error by concluding that it was in aid of their existing jurisdiction. But no matter what label the Air Force Court chose to apply, actual, potential, or supervisory, which is ultimately how they decided to proceed, the Air Force Court had no jurisdiction and must be reversed. Under Article 69, they clearly had an erroneous view of the statute. What they did is they basically wrote the TJAG out of Article 69 D1 and decided for themselves that they were going to review this case in the form of an extraordinary writ. Remarkably, in their decision, they left out 3 important words in subparagraph 2. They said, they have the authority to review any action taken by the Judge Advocate General under this section, and that's where they stopped in their decision. But they left out 3 important words, in such case, which refers back to subparagraph 1, in such case, and that's where the requirement for the referral by the TJAG was absolutely necessary and absent from this case. He never referred it, therefore AFCA never had statutory authority to review it. It's clearly negated by the express language of the statute. They attempted to expand their jurisdiction beyond the limits provided by Congress and attempted to override TJAG's exclusive statutory authority, which cannot be permitted. There's a suggestion in their decision that maybe they had potential jurisdiction, but that too is erroneous. There was no potential jurisdiction here. because it was eliminated when the TJAG did not refer the case to the Air Force.
How do you answer their contention that McPhail and Unger and their progeny, if they have any, permit, if not compel, a different outcome?
Well, with all due respect to this court, Your Honor, McPhail and Unger are likewise erroneous decisions. You wouldn't think that...
Were they erroneous at the time, or were they rendered erroneous by Goldsmith?
They were rendered erroneous by Goldsmith, and you would think we wouldn't need a decision from this court in 2015, so declare it, but it's obvious that we do in light of the Air Force decision in this case. But we also must include the Army Court's decision in Due in this analysis, because Due likewise directly invoked McPhail and Unger, and the Air Force Court invoked Due. So they are all together in this analysis. Due had the same procedural posture as this case: a GCM conviction, a sentence that didn't meet Article 66, an Article 69 review was conducted, and a TJAG decision to not refer the case to the Army. Due then filed two ex-writs with the Army Court, which specified the question of whether they had jurisdiction in the first place to review the writ. The government in Due took the same position that we take here today, and that is that the Army Court couldn't review the writs because Congress gave jurisdiction in Due's case to TJAG exclusively, and the Army Court had jurisdiction only as provided in Article 66 or under Article 69 if the case was in fact referred to them, which did not happen in either Due or this case. Due unanimously, sitting on bonk, rejected the government's argument and held they had jurisdiction and under the All Writs Act and their, quote, supervisory jurisdiction. Because they noted they were the highest court in the Army legal system, they felt they were expected to perform a supervisory function over all matters related to military justice. Therefore, Due held the Army Court had supervisory jurisdiction that was greater than actual statutory jurisdiction, a concept that simply cannot be permitted to stand. Due expressly relied on McPhail and Unger. McPhail is also no longer valid. It was a special court with a sentence that didn't meet 66. TJ denied the 69 application, and the appellant in McPhail files were interrupted with this court.
Now, so do you think that there would be potential jurisdiction if the writ of quorum nobis had been filed before the TJ had had an opportunity to take any action? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I absolutely do.
So we're having a different point in time. It might be there, but he hasn't done anything yet. Do you think that that changes the analysis?
I think that could, Your Honor, and that would actually...
Because in that case, he could take action.
TJ could, absolutely.
He could take action, and he might decide to send it to the CCA, but he hasn't done anything yet.
Exactly. Yes, Your Honor. That would be akin to the common writs we see where an accused isn't happy with his Article 32 or a denial of a government expert at trial. He files an expert with the appellate courts. And while they're almost always going to be denied for prudential reasons, there's at least jurisdiction because the potential exists that a sentence could be rendered by a court in that circumstance.
So the problem here is whether you accept your reading of the statute or a different reading of the statute where one and two are different, that time has passed and he didn't take any action and it wasn't sent to the CCA.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. In McPhail, this court declared because it was, quote, the Supreme Court of the military judicial system and empowered by, quote, the concept of supervisory writs, it held that its power to decide if a writ was in aid of its jurisdiction was not limited by Article 67 appellate jurisdiction. Remarkably, this court held in McPhail that its supervisory authority is especially useful when a matter under review is outside the jurisdiction of the court. This court then ordered the TJAG exercises Article 69 authority and vacate the appellant's conviction. This court committed a similar error in Unger. Unger got an Article 15 for disobeying an order. She turned it down and was sent to a special court, where, of course, an officer cannot receive confined or punitive discharge. The judge denied the motion to dismiss, challenging the legality of the order. Unger then filed a writ at the Navy Court, which denied it. She then filed a writ appeal here. This court noted in Unger that there was no way that case was ever going to receive Article 66 or Article 67 review. But this court continued to rely upon McPhail and its concept of supervisory jurisdiction to conclude that jurisdiction under the All Writs Act to review the writ, even though the case would never come up to the CCA or to this court. Unger noted something very important, something that you mentioned, Judge Stuckey. Unger noted that McPhail was written by Judge Crook. And just 2 years later, Judge Crook repudiated, in our view, fully the concept in McPhail in his concurring opinion in Stewart, which is cited in the Unger decision. Judge Crook's words are quite telling, and quite frankly, what should carry the day today. Judge Crook said, as the order offers no reasons, because the court had summarily denied that writ, I set forth my own. I was wrong in McPhail as to the scope of this court's extraordinary relief jurisdiction. I'm impelled to this admission by perceptions of congressional intention. The power of the Judge Advocate General to grant relief under Article 69 impresses me as so broad as to encompass extraordinary relief of the kind that might otherwise be of cognizance to this court. It seems to me, at least in the court-martial process, cases established as not being within the actual or potential authority of this court, Congress intended this new authority to be exclusive. Congress effectively withdrew such authority from this court. Judge Cook was right in 1978 in that concurring opinion at 5 MJ 220. As the Supreme Court's decision in Goldsmith makes very clear, McPhail and Unger are no longer legally correct, which means Dew is not legally correct, which means the Air Force decision is not correct. This court has fully embraced the concept of Goldsmith, and the Air Force Court should have done the same and recognized it had no jurisdiction. If there are no further questions, may I briefly conclude?
Please.
Your Honors, those who seek to amend Article 66, 67, or 69 must present a petition to the appropriate place, and that is to Congress, not appellate courts like the Air Force Court. Appellant has failed to meet his burden to establish jurisdiction. The court should reverse the erroneous decision of the Air Force Court and repudiate, as Judge Cook attempted to do, once and for all, the concept of supervisory jurisdiction erroneously set forth in Dew, McPhail, Unger, and now the Air Force Court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellant, you have the opportunity for rebuttal, please.
Yes, sir. Your Honors, 2 points. First, when interpreting the statute, specifically Article 69, to interpret it to strip the court of jurisdiction to hear constitutional claims would present the need for a clear statement from Congress removing jurisdiction. And that comes from Doe v. Webster, a 1988 case, where they specifically said that there's issues that arise denying fundamental claims, they would need some sort of showing from Congress denying that specific claim. Any silence to the matter, the court will construe it as being able to at least hear the case and see if we leave this warranted.
But that was a case involving an interpretation of a statute that purported to remove all review of a constitutional question from all cases, from all courts.
It was, Your Honor. It's not directly on point. It involved
it's
Article
3. It's not on point at all.
And it involved an administrative act. But I cite it for the premise of at least the idea when we're talking with fundamental issues like we are in this case, at least some language that the Supreme Court has articulated. The second is, the second point, when we're looking at Goldsmith, if there was any question whether Goldsmith made Unger and McPhail irrelevant, I think the answer to that, if there was a question, after Donetto, there is no question anymore. I think in Donetto, that the Supreme Court limited the Goldsmith ruling to the military courts not being able to review essentially administrative and executive actions. And I think the ruling that the Supreme Court articulated, the fact that they could consider a conviction that was fundamentally flawed in fundamental respect, is a signal at least that in this case, the Air Force Court was correct in being able to hear the writ by the appellant.
All right. I think that does it. Thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsel. The case is now submitted, and we stand in recess until 10 up, please. Thank you.
The court stays in recess until 10 p.m.